You're listening to The Jeff Therius Show.
Well, good afternoon, good evening, and hello, and welcome. It's Wednesday, the 23rd of September. You've tuned in to The Jeff Therius Show. We're coming to you live. And we're going to speak with James Brusseau, PhD in philosophy professor, written a number of scholarly works, but he's also written a novel, and this one's called Empire of Humiliation. This book got one of the most intense reviews I've ever seen. It said, some books touch a nerve, then there's Empire of Humiliation, drilling through the molar, no Novocaine. So, James Brusseau is here with us. He's the author of this book, The Empire of Humiliation. James, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me, Jeff.
The reviews of this book are remarkable. the way people are talking about this, the one review that just jumped out at me, the whole notion of this this book about touching a nerve, but rather drilling through the molar without Novocaine. Yeah. Obviously, a powerful look at, well, imperialism, empire. You start off the book, the prelude to the book, you talk about Cortez coming to the Americas and managing to conquer entire civilizations with less than 500 people. Well, what is the story of Cortez? How is that the sort of setup for your book?
Right. I think this is the spark for the book. Mm-hmm. It really is a tremendous historical mystery. How it is that this Spanish conquistador with 500 or 600 people could triumph over millions of locals here in the New World. Millions of people, thousands of civilizations. Now, historians say there must have been some, part of the reason was that there was some superior technology, part of the reason was there was some infighting among locals of the Indian tribes, but there's this other aspect that people talk about vaguely and without attacking too directly, and that was the kind of arrogance that Cortez demonstrated as he marched across the Americas. He really sought to use condescension mm-hmm. as a kind of weapon against the locals. And the facts seem to show that it worked. So that mystery and that possible solution, how did Cortez do this with only 600 people and the solution? Well, he used humiliation as a kind of tool of empire. That was the spark that got me going on this book. Mm-hmm. It's obviously quite uncomfortable, of course. I suppose that's what the reviewer was thinking when they wrote that it's like a being drilled through the molar. Mm-hmm. The idea of conquering through humiliation is very discomforting. But I think it's also interesting. So I started with that idea. And then I was living in Mexico at the time, mm-hmm. Working in Mexico. And what I noticed was, no one could avoid noticing, was that there's a kind of implicit arrogance or a condescension that necessarily surrounds any American in Mexico. It's not our fault. It's simply a result of the tremendous imbalance between the wealth of the countries. I mean, it's no individual's fault. Mm-hmm. And so there is, it's unavoidable for any American or for any European, for that matter, to not feel as though, regardless of whether they are trying to present this facade or not, and to not feel as though they are casting some arrogance and some condescension and some sort of humiliation around them. And so I saw that today an American in Mexico or a European somehow lives to a certain extent Cortez's experience. And then one other point connects here, too. I also saw that within Mexico, and I think that this is true of many third-world countries, within Mexico there is virtually no middle class. There are a few very wealthy elites. And then down below, 90% of the society live in poverty-stricken conditions. Mm-hmm. So I saw there, too, that there is a kind of relation between the elites in Mexico and the masses, which is quite similar to the relation between, say, the United States and Mexico as a nation. So those were the kinds of things that were winding through my mind, and they were all sparked by that first reality, that first question. How is it that Cortez, with 400 people, conquered the New World? And I think that there's some part of the answer is this notion of humiliation. And the question is, how can humiliation be a tool of empire? How can it work? That's really the question then that started out the novel.
And it is a obviously a huge question. Well, particularly as we try to consider where the American experiment stands today, this notion of we are very much an empirical force in parts, certain parts, well, actually probably in most of the world, whether it's directly through American military or American corporate power throughout the world. And we really need to sort of reconcile this notion of empire, because it really doesn't, it's almost counter to how most Americans view themselves. You know, when they go to a Star Wars movie, they don't root for the Empire. They root for the rebels, and they envision themselves as that sort of group of ragtag rebels fighting against the evil Empire. But here we are today, not necessarily the ragtag rebels we may imagine ourselves.
Yes, I think that probably on that front of movies and sort of popular entertainment, there's part of the explanation for how humiliation works today in our world. It's when people go to a movie anywhere in the world, mm-hmm. of course they see an American movie, but it goes beyond that. For instance, if you go into the libraries in Mexico and you look for an older Mexican writer, frequently you will find that older Mexican writer, his book or her book is no longer produced in Spanish, but the library will still have the book in English translation because that's available.
Wow.
So the sort of domination, economic domination, is tremendous. It goes beyond the kinds of things we normally think about movies and music. It's a daily experience for people in Mexico, no matter what their walk of life is. And so that was sort of what that was sort of the dynamic that, kind of moving this back to the book slightly, that was the dynamic that the protagonist in the book took up. But the idea he had, and this is just a quick summary of the plot of the book, the idea he had is he wanted to start with this idea of humiliation and see how it worked. And he proposed to do an experiment in Mexico wherein this kind of humiliation in Mexico would be recreated.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he did is he set up theatrical, this is the plot of the book, set up theatrical recreations of Cortez's march to Tenochtitlan, which was the capital of Aztec Mexico. And he set up tremendously humiliating ritual sacrifices of individuals as he moved from place to place. And his idea was to resurrect this Cortezian reality by showing that Americans, a pair of Americans actually, were carrying out this play of theater and were actually overtly humiliating the Mexican nation. Now, so this is the anti-hero, this person who's doing this. He's sort of an old and lewd pervert with shadowy connections to the government and this kind of thing. Then on the other side, those who will be against him are two young American expatriates. They find themselves caught up in this plot because for the humiliation of Mexico to be perfect, it must be revealed at the end that Americans are the ones who are doing these, who are mounting this theatrical representations of Cortez. And so these two Americans, the young expatriates, Marina and Anderson, they are being framed for what's going on. They realize they are being framed. And so the story moves forward with the anti-hero carrying out these theatrical killings and Anderson and Marina trying to understand who is doing this and how they can stop it. And it comes to a conclusion that way. So that's how the notion of humiliation today in the world, in a specific place in Mexico, kind of winds into a plot.
I mean, the whole concept of empire and humiliation, I think, is just a fascinating thing to understand. I mean, it's almost part of just psychologically the dynamic of how a person who exudes a certain level of confidence, and even an extension of that is a certain level of arrogance, holds a certain power over other people. And I think a lot of, I mean, you look back to Cortez, but have we evolved to the point where we're not susceptible to that same sense of humiliation, or someone with a certain level that they still, obviously the media respects swagger and arrogance. We saw that in the previous president in this country. I couldn't understand how somebody of his mental gifts, I guess you could say, was able to hold sway over people. But it was almost like that he exuded this sense of arrogance. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that you are exactly right on that. Okay. And this is what, this is really the substance of the novel. That is, while I'm running through the plot, this imperialist is recreating Cortez, what I'm also examining underneath that is exactly the point you're making, how it is in Mexican society, and also in society in general, what is the mechanism of how arrogance and swagger works? What kind of power does that, how is it that the power of arrogance works? Mm-hmm. And I sort of, it seems to me that it works through kind of a three-step process. There's first the idea that we see in just common advertising, that when you humiliate someone else, you also create envy in them. I mean, we see this, for instance, in the advertising for cars. You see that there's a Porsche, and of course, next to that, there's a guy who's very successful and happy, and he's surrounded by attractive women and so on. I mean, these kinds of ads are really humiliating, I think, for some people who look at them and say, my God, my life, I'm a loser compared to this person. And so the first step, this humiliation, gives rise to a kind of envy. You know, I want what that person has. And then I think the second step of how this works is that when we envy someone so frequently, it's true that we are soured by them, but we're also drawn in their direction. We tend to copy the way they dress and how they talk. Maybe we eat at the restaurant where they've been seen, or we try to get our kids into the same school, this kind of thing. It seems like when we envy someone, we become, in a certain sense, obedient to them. We copy them. Now, if that's right, if humiliation makes envy, and envy makes obedience, then I think that that's the link that you follow to say, well, humiliation can be a tool for empire. It can be a tool that makes obedience in the world. And similarly, I think more interestingly, really, just in the human level, the way people relate to each other, this is the way swagger kind of works. It's a tremendously ugly thing, of course, but I think that that's not a reason to avoid exploring it, and this is what I'm trying to do in the novel.
Well, and I think most people consider that, you know, arrogance and being humiliated would breed resentment, but it actually quite the opposite. It actually breeds it taps into that sense of, I guess, insecurity and longing and uncertainty that people carry. And the person, again, just trying to understand this dynamic, the person humiliating them is obviously, instead of someone to be resented or hated, someone to aspire to.
Right, I think that both parts are there, but the truly ugly and twisted part is that second part, you know, where you find yourself, despite yourself, you know, chained to obedience to the person you hate. I think that's the real tense part of the book, and the place where humiliation as a device of power reaches its blackest and sharpest and also most interesting degree. I also think, just to bring this back to Mexico a little bit, sometimes when someone goes to live in a different country, they see things more clearly than they see in their own country. And in Mexico, what I saw very clearly was this class structure, with the very wealthy above the 10% or 5%, and then below that 90% of the poverty stricken. And I could see so clearly because I was not from there. Everything was so new to me and kind of black and white, so to speak, so the relief was so sharp. I could see very clearly that the way the owners of the homes treat their cooks and their nannies and their maids, because the wealthy all have cooks and nannies and maids and so on, that the way they treat and control these individuals is not with generosity or with respect, but rather with this arrogance. And in fact, this was really quite interesting to me. I noticed that if someone from the upper class tried to be generous or show respect to sort of the maid, the maid didn't buy it. She thought that she was being made fun of or some such thing. So there is this kind of structure in Mexico. Obviously, that's not so true here in the States, where we've got a middle class. But in Mexico, where you've got this upper class and this lower class, and they're divided, and there's no way to cross, going up or going down. There you can see very clearly how this arrogance, the structure of this arrogance and humiliation, how it works on a day-to-day basis, and how the maids and the cooks are controlled with sternness, and they're controlled by their own envy. So there are many levels on which you can see this working.
I guess, is there something in the psyche that reaches toward, I guess, that stability or that sense of knowing their place? I guess it's hard to understand. Well, obviously, as somebody from from the middle class here in America, it's hard to understand that dynamic.
Right. I mean, it seems clear that there must be, I'm not a psychologist, but there must be a kind of psychological explanation, because rationally, clearly it makes no sense. Now, exactly what that explanation is, that's really not the subject of the book. More interested in doing is understanding what the phenomena is of humiliation and how it can be implemented to create power, both internationally and also just between people. And so that's what the book explores. It connects, sort of another point is that it connects to some extent in that odd way with Joseph Nye's idea of soft power. He says that what we should try to do, and President Obama is a firm advocate of this. Nye says, what we should try to do is, instead of using coercion in the world, we should use co-option and attraction. That is, instead of sending tanks and planes to get our way, we should instead extend calls to negotiation, respectful negotiation, enact the kinds of policies that we see President Obama enacting currently. It seems to me that this notion of humiliation has a strange relation with what Nye is saying. On the one hand, it's the opposite of what Nye is saying, because Nye says, look, we can bring other countries into alignment with our interests as Americans, by treating them with respect and not use tanks. Well, what humiliation is saying is that, well, we can get the same end. We can bring countries into alignment without using tanks, with using soft power. But the soft power is this very ugly and sharp tool called humiliation. So humiliation is a kind of soft power, but exactly the opposite of the kind of, it has the tone is exactly the opposite of what President Obama and Joseph Nye want to talk about. So there's a kind of a connection there between the idea of humiliation and the current geopolitical scene. What Obama is doing at the UN today, etc.
Right. Do you feel that, that same model that Cortez used, that same sense of humiliation, do you think that mass populations, well, this population, the United States population, or mass populations of the world could be conquered again along those lines, along using the tools of humiliation? Do you see that dynamic still active, as maybe not as it was during Cortez's time? Do you think that's still applicable today?
Not only do I believe it's applicable, I believe that it's a fundamental, though not the only part, but it's a fundamental part of the relation between the United States and Mexico today. I think that there is a kind of level of humiliation and obedience on the part of Mexico, which is unavoidable because of this radical disparity that exists between our two nations. Just as a kind of example, I mean, imagine what it would be like to live in a country like Mexico, where people are willing to risk death to leave the country and go to the United States. And this affects people on a profound level. Now, again, of course, it's always important when we talk about these things to underline that no one is proposing that this is a good thing. And I don't think that anyone is at fault. It's a structural social reality. I'm only trying to describe what that reality is. I think that dynamic of humiliation is part of the dynamic between the United States and Mexico. And it follows that we will not have good luck in our foreign policy vis-a-vis Mexico unless we understand that. I do want to insist I am not promoting this. I'm certainly not promoting humiliation as a tool for controlling other people or for nations controlling other nations. I am saying, however, that it seems to me that it is there, and you can see there's symptoms of it in the way the two nations relate to each other. And it's there between people. We see it in the way we relate to each other every day. You know, this strange pull we have to imitate and obey the people who we envy and who humiliate us with their whatever they have that is superior to what we have. Perhaps they are better writers, or they're more successful in the marketplace, or so on. I think on all these levels, to understand them, we need to understand the pull and the power that humiliation has.
Wow. And again, as you say, it applies to so many different levels of society and human interaction, and to not take it into account, to not understand it, again, is I guess, at our own peril.
Right.
To not understand, yeah.
Yes. I think that's probably the note I would put on that. Is something that it is ugly, but it would be a mistake to not consider it, I think, when considering international relations and personal relations to a certain extent.
I mean, is the act of just considering, of being aware of it, is that the best defense to it? Or are we still, even knowing it exists, is it such a deep-seated dynamic? I mean, obviously we're talking about something from decades upon decades ago with Cortez, and you know, we were just discussing ads on television that are on the air right now that play off this same dynamic. It seems like this is something very intrinsic to human experience, that there's something in us that because of our social interactive nature, that we're manipulated this way, much like wolves in a wolf pack. Humiliation is a big part of how the pack is controlled and organized.
Right. Yeah, I have to say that as a philosopher, I'm a postmodern, so I do not believe, part of my theoretical foundation, that I do not believe in essential qualities. However, in this case, it does seem to be quite persistent it across centuries and across nations. In space and time, there does seem to be moments where you can identify the eruption of humiliation as a kind of tool for control. On the other hand, of course, there are also things that change. Mm-hmm. One part of the story that we haven't touched on is there is a level in which I consider, through the character of Marina and the kind of trick that she pulls at the end of the book, another part of the international world today, it seems to me, is curious. Is we are witnessing the development of a kind of transnational nationalism. I mean by that, I think that ours is, you and I, kind of people of our generation, we are the first to see or to have experience of people who can go abroad whenever they want, wherever they want, and they can choose countries to live in, just like we choose to shop at Whole Foods or Albertsons. Mm-hmm. There are a whole set of people out there now who will just change countries as soon as they're unhappy with that country. And what is curious about this kind of personality, I met many people like this in Mexico. What is curious about this kind of personality is that they share all of the characteristics that we normally associate with a country. You know, we just like we think of Germans being a certain way, or Japanese being a certain way, or Americans being a certain way. You know, there are also these people who are like that. The only difference is that they don't have any geographic country they belong to, but they do share a set of social codes and ethical views and lifestyle patterns. I mean, how old they are when they get married, that kind of thing. You know, they have certain foods they like to eat and they don't like to eat. They have certain ways of dressing. Kind of as a tendency, they tend to like Montessori schools for their children, etc. You can find these people now in almost every country of the world, but they don't live in any one country. It's as though they should get their own passport, you know, the transnational passport. These people who have no geographical home, but they share a kind of lifestyle with others who are like them in Mexico City or Honduras or Peking or Tokyo or Berlin. Wherever you go, you find this group of people. And I also intersect with that idea a little bit in the book, and I wonder if, to a certain extent, now bringing this back to the notion of humiliation, if there's an answer to this ugliness of humiliation in this different kind of identity, that would be an identity which would exist just without countries, and instead exists as a certain kind of lifestyle, I would say, in a, to make a brief answer. Of course, I'm not saying that would eliminate the mechanism of humiliation, but there's a kind of response there on the national level, international level.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, this whole notion of humiliation. I think about the not so much the struggles with our neighbors to the south, but some of the entanglements that the U.S. is involved in the Middle East. One of the main, dignity is such a large part of Islam, and to offend someone's dignity, to humiliate them, particularly in front of members of their family, is considered the utmost of offense. And so possibly we see somewhat of an immunity to that whole sense of humiliation in part of the Muslim world that actually violently responds to these humiliations over time. That may be somewhat different in Christian cultures.
Right, you know, that's a very good point. Probably we would have to say, adjusting for the point you've made, is we really would have to localize this notion of humiliation and say, look, it works in certain ways, in certain relations between two specific people, or between two specific countries, the United States and Mexico today, or Cortez and Mexico 500 years ago. But I think it's a mistake then to go on and say, well, we can use this idea as a key to understand all international relationships. The point you're making, I think, is exactly right, that this notion of humiliation should be used in a very limited way to understand some specific phenomena, but certainly it's not a broad claim about international relations.
Right. Interesting. Wow, I just lost track of time there. Folks, the book is called Empire of Humiliation. James Brousseau is the author. James, thank you so much for being here and, taking on this topic and sharing it with my listeners today. Absolutely a fascinating read and a fascinating concept. And I really think everybody ought to read this to get to really understand and steel themselves.
Very good. Well, thanks for having me, Jeff.
It was great speaking with you. Thank you.